Hello there. We're trying to keep Choral Chihuahua going, and so we draw your attention to the possibility of listening to us on Patreon for just a few quid a month. This also magically gets rid of the ads. That's Patreon with an E, patreon.com/choralchihuahua. On with the app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It's like Mickey Mouse, doesn't it?
I'm standing by a biffer bin at the east end of York Minster, and look who I've bumped into. It's Eamon Dugan.
Oh, good evening all. Nice to see you.
It's been ages, isn't it? It's been... We keep trying to do Choral Chihuahuas, but life keeps getting in the way, and you've been incredibly busy, and I've been doing my thing. We managed to couple with one with Sammy.
You've been super busy.
Well, we try very hard to give that impression.
Yeah.
But you've just given up most wonderful concert with the 16, part of the Choral Pilgrimage, which we talk about a lot on Choral Chihuahua. And it was lovely to hear it actually live and see Harry doing his stuff. And to see the singers, most of whom I know, but not all. A couple of sopranos and an alto, black-haired alto. Who was that?
Lissy Paul.
That's Lissy Paul.
Lovely.
And it was a bird program. And I had to say, Vigilante at that speed in the Minster. Impressed, it worked. But that's a scary one to a party sort of piece.
So much good music in this program. I mean, where do you begin? With bird... The first piece in the second half, Tristitia.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That is just... In the rehearsal today, we got to the start of the second part, and I turned around to my desk partner, Rob McDonald, and said, how is it that he can write something so simple in three parts, so just basic imitation, but he changes one note, and it's got the most devastating emotional impact. It's someone working at the absolute height of their powers.
And what did Rob say? Because he's got a very, very low voice.
He just nodded at me and, like, you know.
A man of few words, except when he's singing. Yeah. And lovely to see Harry again, our erstwhile co-presenter.
Yes,
he's
indeed,
just
yeah.
Been knocking away a little bit of gin in the cross keys there. Lovely to see a pub entirely full of professional choral singers.
Yes. I think the lady behind the bar was expecting a quiet night, and when at 10 o'clock we descended... she wasn't best pleased to see us,
no,
was she?
But she was even less happy when you asked her for a pint of humour.
Well, I mean, if you're going to be if you're going to be grumpy like that, you've got to expect, you know, the odd little wry comment.
Anyway, this is just a quick hello, really, because this is your episode. This is you and some older singers in, or old, as one of the ladies herself describes them. You just a couple of weeks ago in Italy, and you're going to set it up very nicely. And I know the view from Monte Conero that you're talking about down onto the bay. That's quite something, isn't it?
It is a really beautiful setting, and it is a great place to go and and make music, because you are very cut off from the other world, and it gives you an opportunity to focus on what you're trying to do in terms of learning the music and doing something with it and getting into a particular style of music. It also gives the space to maybe focus on what you're trying to do vocally. And what's surprising, actually, and laudable, I think, is that a lot of the singers were actually, on certain days, rather than going off and making their excursions, I would often see them having an afternoon in the hotel just working on their music or practicing, and people taking it very, very seriously, because this is a recreation.
And also, it's a post-COVID thing. There's a lot of talk, and as the episode goes on, people start talking about what COVID has done to them. I hope people will listen to that, because it's really interesting. You're not on your own if you're finding it difficult post-COVID. And they talked about your exercises. And they talked about the Freddie Steady one, which I then asked you to send me an example of, thinking it would last about 5 seconds. And it took about 4 minutes for you to explain it. So I'm not going to use that. Quick Precy.
Okay, Steady Freddy, it's a breathing exercise where you control the rate at which you exhale, going and you breathe out on that consonant for, let's say, 7 seconds, and then the next time you do it, you breathe out for 8 seconds and 9 seconds, 10 seconds, so on and so forth. And if you repeat this over a period of time, it should sort of increase your stamina, increase your capacity to sing longer phrases.
Welcome to Choral Chihuahua.
It's a Morales thing.
Birdsong and a lawnmower keeping me company, looking out over the coast, and a really, really wonderful view here in Monteconaro near Ancona, near the town of Cirolo, where I'm working this week running a course for Andrew van der Beek and the Laycock music courses. These are courses for amateur singers, where we come, and it's a sort of residential week, and work through a selection of repertoire, often focusing on a particular period or a particular region, nationality. In this instance, we're doing a program called After Palestrina, and it focuses on three composers: Luca Marenzio, Asprilio Pacelli, and Vincenzo Bertolusi. There's a sort of voluptuous quality to a lot of his music. So I'm hoping that the singers are going to enjoy it. I don't think many of them will have come across Pacelli and Bertolusi before. So we'll see what they make of it. I'm here with Andrew van der Beek, the founder of the Laycock courses. Andrew, you've been running these for quite some number of years now, haven't you?
Fred, first one was in 1986. And your friend Harry was our conductor then.
Harry Christopher's, all the way back in 1986. And what led you to start these?
I think that's because I'm not trained as a musician. My highest musical qualification is grade 4 violin. Merit, mind. I'm a scientist, really, by education. But I drifted into music and discovered summer schools in my early 20s. I went to Dartington a lot of times, and another one in Germany run by the Merck firm, which makes the wind instruments. And they just seemed such marvellous occasions where you're sort of locked away in a beautiful place for a week, do music, which was what you wanted to do anyway, with wonderful people. And I just made so many lifelong friendships at those weeks, and learned a lot of musicianship as well.
There's obviously a lasting appeal here, because people come back again and again on these courses, it seems.
Yes, we're blessed with a very loyal following. I try to get the most fantastic directors, Raymond.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
And Monteconaro is a wonderful place. It's a real, like a good summer school venue. It's locked away from the real world. There's no contact with your concerns about tax or all the troubles of the world. You can just escape into music for a whole week.
And
without wanting to take away from your achievements as a singer this week, of course you have another string to your bow, don't you, as a player of exotic instruments?
Yes, that was more in my earlier adulthood. At Dartington, I was very lucky enough to meet David Munro in one course, and eventually I was asked to play in his early music consort whenever they expanded to do recordings or tours or proms. And that was a wonderful period of my life.
Yeah, just tell us what you played.
Well, I played all the Renaissance wind instruments, the crumb horn, the racket, the kirtle. Then mentioned sackbut and the serpent.
The serpent, that's the instrument that I always think of you as playing. It sounds like there's one coming up the hill.
Yes.
But it might just be a motorbike.
Yes, I remember seeing, I had the Observer's Book of Music, I think, as a child, and there's a picture of a serpent player. And ever since I saw that at the age of 12 or something, I wanted to get one of these instruments and possibly play it, and it eventually happened.
Amazing.
Yes.
Laycock courses are full of lovely people with a wide and varied experience of life. Let's hear from some of them about what singing in groups means to them.
As a musician, since a very early age, living in a dysfunctional family, music has been a refuge for me. Also a way to bring in happiness in the family, if we could be together and sing at any time. But all through my life, anything that's worried me, I've gone to music, and it works. It can heal you, as long as it's not such a bad performance you're doing. And you're with other people, breathing together, and desiring to make things work. And even if you're in a dysfunctional office or anywhere, singing in a group is a wonderful experience.
I absolutely, totally agree. And I found, and I know this has been true of other people, that since my husband died, the choir has what kept me sane. Going to sing with other people, and it, as Jenny says, it's breathing with other people, it's being with other people, it's the social side of music as well. But actually, it's the singing, and it's actually the same, because I play the cello, and it's the same in a string group as well. But singing is the best.
That's one of the great things about these courses is the social element, of course. I mean, yes, we're here to sing and to work and try and improve, yes, and to create an ensemble as the week goes on. But also, we get to have, yes, dinner together every night, yes, and people go, absolutely, off and, you know, do their day trips to visit Cirolo and yes, and the other towns nearby. But it all stems from the music, doesn't it?
Yes, I totally agree.
If only our politicians would, you know, understand that. I mean, you know, we keep on banging our heads against the wall with this, but it's so obvious.
I worked in a parliament for over 30 years, and I'm going to tell you something. Some of the worst politicians, after the parliament gets up, get together in someone's room and they play music, and lots of them are former band members.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I was working in Denmark recently, and somebody told me that it's not uncommon for meetings to start with a group sing song of a Danish folk song. It's really common for that to happen. I mean, how enlightened is that? Wonderful, but also wonderful for, you know, for the mood and setting a good tone for a meeting, but also to maintain and cultivate, you know, their folk song tradition, which is really strong in Denmark. I've got some of the troublemakers here. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I meant. Just who are we talking to here?
Martin.
Martin and
Miranda.
Yeah, now Miranda, this is your first course, isn't it?
It's my first course with Laycock, yes.
Yeah, tell me, how have you found it?
I found it really, really enjoyable.
A little stressful at times.
Stressful how?
Because it's very intense. It's sometimes quite difficult. But I've really, really enjoyed the musical director and everything that he's given
You've
us
enjoyed
to...
enjoyed the musical director?
Oh, shush! Can you cut that bit, please?
Can that be broadcast?
What really? I was about to say was I've enjoyed all of the exercises that you've brought to us. I think it's been really, really enjoyable. All of those things that we learn to improve the way that we sing and how we can actually, especially as you said, as we're growing older, improve our voice, you know, moving up and down the scale and everything else. So yeah, I mean, that's been very, very interesting.
Exercise where you relax the folds and just it's amazing. I mean, why has nobody ever mentioned that to me before?
That's the thing. There's a lot of research done in the last, I mean, in the last 20, 30 years, which is, I think, has really sort of changed people's perceptions of what, you know, what we need to be doing, perhaps in terms of vocal maintenance, if you like. I find that one absolutely extraordinary as well.
It certainly helps the bottom range.
Yeah, and especially exactly that, because
all those G's and F's tonight.
Yeah. So as tension creeps in, you know, while you're singing, which is inevitable to a degree, to an extent. Yeah, it's a great way to relax. Right, turn up. The composers that we've been looking at, Pacelli, Bertoluzzi, and Marenzio. Familiar names to you, Martin?
Marenzio was familiar, but the other two weren't.
Yeah.
Tonight's was actually a really good piece. I love it. It's just so hard to get it going. But yeah. It was
surprisingly challenging. That's for the Marenzio Iniquos Odio Abui.
Just imagine it with sackbuts. It would be wonderful.
That exactly. Piece. That's exactly the sort of thing you want to hear with it. Yeah. But rhythmically, quite... I mean, not challenging, but it's... I think for us, it's managing to keep the concentration so you're sort of reading both choirs at the same time. So when we've got this dialogue between the two choirs, not switching off, but managing to keep counting, imagining you're still singing so that you can pick it up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great. There we go. Let's hear a little bit of that Marenzio Iniquos Odio Abui right now.
Thank you. gosh. Lots of people sing at our age and say how good it is for their mental well-being. I think how you can feel absolutely exhausted at the end of a day, your energies
when
run
lower.
And you come
out feeling energised.
Go out and you sing, and it must be the breathing and the making music together, the community aspect, and I suppose the desire to do better. It's easy to go sing in a community, but perhaps less easy to do it well, because you just do what you've always done in an amateur fashion. I'm talking amateurs now, of course.
Yeah, of course. You say an amateur, but the intricacy of what we're doing is actually fantastic.
Yeah. Yes, here. The mental stimulus of counting and rhythms.
Yeah,
and,
I think in some ways I'm singing better than ever because I'm doing so much of it.
Yes,
and it's amongst friends, which is fantastic. But on the other hand, of course, we have the decline. I mean, a little list here. Losing high notes.
No, losing, I don't. In fact, high notes for me are better. Yes.
Losing low notes. My range generally is decreased.
Mm.
Losing vocal agility.
Yes.
Yep.
The brain can do it, but the voice can't.
Mm-hmm. I'm finding that the lugubrious ones you mentioned are so much easier and more enjoyable because I can do them, but the leaps that you're expecting us to do, the syncopation and that sort of stuff, is so hard.
So is it the case that the slightly slower moving pieces, which have less, quickly notated rhythmic passages, what I feel in the room is that as we approach, let's say, a little section which is rhythmically more complex, you can almost feel the sort of apprehension,
the dread
coming into the room,
and the confidence isn't there anymore to do it.
Yeah, it's really hard, isn't it, to keep that mental clarity, to think we know where the beat is, we know what the pulse is, and to not have that rush of blood to the head makes
and
you.
And then there are more notes to fit into the same space of time at the bar, and you sort of go into a quick. Where is the beat? What is happening?
Your mental processes just are slower. I hate to say it, they are. I mean, this afternoon you were saying, "Go on, you've got to do it." It's one, and you come in on two. You're not doing it. You're saying you're lingering on that note, and we do linger.
Yeah.
And
waiting for the next person to hit, probably.
But I think even if your brain's in the right place, if it's in the right place, it's still getting the voice to do it. Mm. It's still is a problem, the agility part.
I think you can definitely blame the conductor. He sounds like a monster, this guy. Well, absolute tyrant.
Once he threatened if you did it wrong again, you'd be standing drinks for the whole section. It really pulled people into shape.
We did it, didn't
and
we?
What
yes.
happened at that point when
we
I said...
Audition, yeah, perfect.
Yes, exactly. A little sort of, carrot and stick.
Thank you.
But we all need to strive, don't we, all the time to inflect the text and to make sure that we're not just singing it one dynamic or singing in one shape, one colour. We have to think imaginatively all the time. That's one of Mark Elder's great things, you know. I mean, not that Mark does much polyphony, I don't think, but one of the things he's always saying to choirs, I've been lucky enough to work with him a lot over the last, you know, sort of 10 years, and he's always saying, think imaginatively. Mm. And it's a great dictum to sort of hang on to. So, you know, we must never be run-of-the-mill.
No. And you have a word that's repeated or a phrase that's repeated, then each one's got to be different. It's got to grow on the one before or...
Do something with it, that's what you say.
Yeah. And that's something that we encounter in music all the time. Of course, you know, we have to sing adjuvame, adjuvame, adjuvame. And one of the pieces that we were singing today, we've got to sing it six, seven, eight times between the two choirs. Mm-hmm. If you're singing Schöne Mürrchen by Schubert, you have to sing dein ist mein Herz und soll es ewig, ewig bleiben. Many, many times in number 11 in Schöne Mürrchen, you know, you've got to find a different way to do it every time. You have to create, you have to invent.
So it presents a colour rather
exactly.
than it, yeah.
There's always got to be a reason for repetition.
Yeah,
quite so.
I also want to mention your warm-ups because they've been very enlightening and very useful.
The best ones yet, really best ones
you've
yet.
You've given us sort of a way of coping with particular voice breaks. Also,
can you be more specific about what it is that you found particularly useful?
Well, I think,
and if you can describe what it is that you maybe were struggling with and what's helped.
Yes, so I think the focus bit, getting everybody's brain engaged and concentrated, so the clapping exercises and the physicality of doing what you've done with the sound, so we produce a sound and introduce physical movements. So it's also good for the intricacy and the coordination that you require in order to do what we're doing. That's read music off the page, the words, the phrasing, the counting, the everything else. So that's been really helpful to see.
I've had the sliding ones because I've got this break. There's no doubt when I get to about an F, there's very little there. It changes from the top to the bottom. There's nothing there in the middle. And this sliding one is helping to overcome that bridge that is there. And that's been really helpful.
I found that, well, as I said to you, you know, my own sort of vocal exercises, I found those have really helped me address, like, issues within my own voice. Yeah.
The first day, it was really hard to do it. Yeah. Really hard. I just felt I leapt between the two, as you said. And then slowly, when you break it down and do it really slowly and concentrate with your eyes closed particularly, then you start to understand how you can swoop up and down. Have you found that helpful?
Yes, hugely. But I think that the biggest thing about your warm-ups is that I've enjoyed every minute and haven't got bored.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That's because we usually hate warm-ups,
yes,
don't we?
Yes, most choirs hate warm-ups, and yours have been
lovely.
We've
hated ours.
Really
hard.
It's very creative.
Yeah. I mean, even here, there have been certain aspects of warm-ups in the past where, you know, I could have done without half of it. But no, excellent. Really good.
You heard it here first, folks. and I've got it in writing as well.
Yes.
that's very nice to hear. The connection between a physical movement and how that relates to what we're trying to do with our voices is, of course, hugely important. We can't see the muscles that we're using when we're singing, and it's difficult to know how to manipulate them if you haven't trained them, you know, to a high degree. So, for example, let's say if we're trying to get up and over a note, making a gesture that takes us up and over, or stretching, you know, drawing out the sound. Even if it's something as what's seemingly straightforward as making a syllable or a vowel long, just pulling one's fingers apart in a sideways gesture can really help make that connection between what you actually need to do vocally, because we might think we're doing it, but of course it doesn't always come across that way. As Mary King, who appears in a, you know, on an earlier episode of Choral Chihuahua, you know, said that you might think that you're doing something which is going to have, you might be making a musical gesture which you think is going to be very striking, and but then if you listen back to it, you realise that there's nothing there at all. And we have to go much further, you know, with that process in order for it to really register. And I think that's one of the things that at times this week we've really, really embraced that. But of course the challenge with all of these things is making it habitual. And in a week like this, five, 6 days when we're together, I'm throwing a lot of information at you in a short space of time, and it's a question of how much one can absorb and then hopefully take away.
We'll all take different nuggets away, I think, which apply to our own idiosyncrasies. We're all different.
Well, which actually leads me to one of my points, which is that a feature of growing old is that within 2 minutes you simply revert to type.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's a feature just of one's age. I think it's human condition, is it, actually?
It's this focus you have to have before you start to sing. So
some things will remain, though. There's no doubt.
Yes, no, I think very true. Very true.
Yeah. Post-COVID, coming back and working with choirs again, one of the things that I found was that the levels of concentration were seemingly really quite severely affected by it. And this is not just with non-professional singers, but also right across, from the upper echelons of the groups that I work with, right down to students and then kids as well. That ability to concentrate for long periods, to hold one's mental focus and to keep pushing oneself, took a real hit. Was that, have you found that to be the case as well? And in a week like this, where ostensibly we're on a kind of holiday, I say we, you're on a kind of holiday here to enjoy some singing, but I'm asking you to really, really work hard during these sessions.
Yeah, I think my feeling is that my concentration is nowhere near as good, but I'm older, and what were we doing during COVID? We were on our phones with 10-second attention spans, which didn't help, and we lost the habit. And also, from the very first COVID jab I had, I was convinced that something had changed slightly in my brain. But there again, is it just actually the isolation that was doing it? We'll never know. But something has changed.
Yeah. That's been very, as I say, very much my experience of it. I think it is getting better, but I think it's something that we all need to be conscious of and strive to, to work with it. My chamber choir, the Thomas Tallis Society, it's taken us some time to get back to, approaching the levels that we were at pre-COVID. And I find that, myself, the first concert back with the 16 that we did immediately after the pandemic was very, very nervy. We were really concerned as to whether we could do it anymore. Just before we walked on stage, there was a real sense of not knowing what was going to happen, actually. Even though we're all very experienced and, been doing this a long time now. But there was a sense of, goodness, I just don't quite know what's going to happen here.
That's certainly been the case in younger children. I've worked with younger children with a bit of music, choirs and things. But they certainly have got more jittery, short attention span.
Yep.
They still love it. I mean, I think making music with children is one of my very favourite things to do. But it's quite scary how just 2 years out, it's three, wasn't it, in the end, has taken its toll on.
Yeah, completely.
There's also attitudes. Again, is it age? Is it COVID? Or is it just other factors? But, for instance, I'm now too lazy to sing difficult music. Is that because I always was? Yes.
Yeah. No.
is it because for 2 years we didn't sing any music at all?
Yes.
And then suddenly everything's difficult, and you think and then I have this resentment when somebody tries to make me sing something I don't want to sing.
Yes.
Come on, Jenny. What's your view on that one?
Grumpy old man syndrome. Yes. That's what I say.
Well, this reminds me a little bit of a lay clerk in a certain choir that I used to know of, who, whenever there was new music on the music list that he didn't know, a deputy would appear in his place for that particular even song. He'd reached that point where not that he couldn't do it, but he just didn't want to. Yeah, it's like, I know the music that I like to sing, and that's what I'm going to stick to.
I think that one of the things that goes back to COVID is that my breath control has gone. It's absolutely awful. I can't sing through phrases anymore. I find myself sneaking breaths when everybody else isn't, which is a strategy.
We all are.
No, but it is worse. There's no doubt about it. It just isn't there anymore. It's not.
Have you thought of breathing before you start singing?
Thank you very much.
Well, yeah. Someone's been listening this week at least, yeah.
Think. Breathe. Sing.
There it is. Just say it again.
Think. Breathe. Sing.
There it is. That's the sequence.
Yeah, but it's not there. I mean, it's lung capacity as well. I think that's been affected by COVID. I really do. I've had it twice, you know, and it does.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure about that. The Steady Freddy exercises that we've been working on, do those. As I said, when I first went to the Guildhall School of Music, my teacher made me do those for about a year to help, basically get the breath moving, flowing.
Mm. And steadily, that's the thing I find, it's difficult. You can have a package of breath that comes out at the beginning, and then you're left, and then sometimes nothing. It disappears in the middle, and there's nothing left, and you have to snatch a breath and move on. So it's just getting that regular steady.
How extraordinary is it that we breathe all day and all night, hopefully, and yet someone asks you to breathe and it becomes the most difficult thing in the world to do? Why do we put ourselves through this?
in the name of music.
Yeah, quite.
And some of it is the multitasking too. I mean, that's certainly gone by the board. I mean, I'm much worse than that. And you notice that when we're trying to do your exercises, none of us are breathing. And that's it's because we're not multitasking.
Well, yeah, that is the challenge for any musician, because we've all got to be able to multitask. It's not, you know, that's not the preserve of conductors only. You know, singers have got to watch the conductor, they've got to be reading the music, they've got to be thinking ahead, they've got to be thinking of their, you know, the breathing. Technical issues, breathing, lifting the soft palate, you know, what vowel are you singing, where's your tongue position? You know, that's, you know, you can tie yourself in knots, ultimately, can't you? But having said that, you know, we try and practice these things in order that they become habitual and they become second nature. And what I have found again and again and again over the years, working with all levels of musicians, is that if there's an emotional connection to the music, to the text, the voice will do what it needs to do. If what you're feeling is real and sincere, the voice will speak. And I found that again and again. And I think we've heard that at times this week, but of course it's difficult to achieve all the time. But there have been moments where we've made sounds where I've seen it in people's faces, that surprise, you know, shock almost at how good some of the sounds have been.
Yeah.
Well, here's another case in point where the physical gesture has can help with that, in terms of, you know, we've talked a lot this week about the coordination of how we get the onset of the sound, so the coordination of the breath and then the onset of the sound, something that, again, you know, when you mention it, doesn't sound like it should be that difficult, but in practice it can be quite hard to achieve. And when one gives a physicalization to it, in this case conducting ourselves, giving a three breath and sing,
really works.
Immediately it works, because there's, it's creating that connection between the brain and the physical, the movement. I've always found that's a very useful tool to make a gesture with things.
And here's a good example of Julia Doyle and a few other colleagues in Ifagellini showing this really beautifully.
Dolcemente mi dice, oh mia figlia. dolcezza e di diletto, prendi la tosta, amore, stampala nel mio petto. Scrivi solo per lei, scrivi solo per lei, l'anima mia.
So this business of physical gestures enabling singers to produce the sound you want or the particular phrasing you want, is that something that's common in the conducting world? Can you go to classes and courses, or how do you learn to do that?
That's a good question. I think I learnt a mixture. I learnt a lot of it on the street, sort of working it out for myself. As it were, but I also learnt a lot of it from my own singing teachers. I was very blessed to have two wonderful teachers. Great Susan McCulloch, who was my teacher for over 10 years, and then the equally wonderful Robert Dean. Two very different teachers in many ways, but wonderfully inspirational and very, very practical, both of them. Mm. And Sue in particular talks a lot about the sort of this physicalization of it. So if you've got to get up over the top of a note, that there is a sense of, there's an energy to it that we can't be, it sounds obvious to say it, but we can't be disconnected from what our bodies are doing, you know.
Oh, that was interesting, the upper part of you and the lower part of you mentioned that
exactly that. So it has felt at times as like we're just singing from the throat up, whereas of course we need to sing right, you know, almost from your toes up, you know, if you like. It's all connected, as we know, but I think making that connection mentally and sort of psychologically can be a huge help to us. And it, you know, we've heard that this week, and it's something that I've used a lot over the years.
It's helped me a lot this week when you keep saying it over and over again, that, and it's something, this flatness, I believe that's only come probably since COVID, because I've never sung flat. But now the thought of actually coming over and, like, you know, coming down
approaching a note from
that's
above,
that's helped a load, yeah.
Without hitting a ceiling.
Yes, rather than aiming for it. You do that.
I've never banged my head on a ceiling in my life, but I know what it's like to get stuck underneath the note and not be able to make it spin. Few people have spoken to me this week, and we touched on this a moment ago about breaks in voices, gaps appearing within voices as we get older, and how one negotiates, you know, through that. Is that something that you've experienced or are experiencing?
I think I've always had a gap in my voice as a never high enough to be a soprano, but, you know, down there somewhere. Altos are often this middle patch, and you get an actual break between your chest voice and your head voice. So I think that the strategies you've given us are definitely going to help. The sirening up slowly, 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 and arriving over the top.
Yep.
And then coming back down, but breaking it down into these milli, 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 milli.
The slow siren.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remind you of that catchphrase that that Charlotte Mobbs uses: a siren a day keeps the larynx in play. Allowing that larynx to be mobile, because that is one of the challenges we face as we get older, is keeping that larynx moving, mobile, flexible, allowing it to tilt. And
a simple exercise like a siren.
Mm. A good activity for the car, I think, if you're in the car going along the motorway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just siren all along.
Yeah, yes. I will frequently do a bit of puffy lips or sirening in the car. And of course, if you're in London on the tube or if you're on a bus and you can't get a seat, you just start doing a little bit of that, and you'll find that
clear the decks.
Yeah, exactly. People just move away, and you'll get a bit of personal space or somewhere to sit. Yeah.
11:30 at night, just walked past the bathroom and heard someone doing some sirens in the toilet. That's commitment.
I mean, that's one of the things that I have found a little frustrating this week. Anything else that's got up your collective noses?
Endless chatting, yes.
I think people have been quite well disciplined here, but not everywhere.
Do you?
Really?
Yeah. I don't think so, no.
Relatively.
I think I've found no far worse than this.
Yeah.
A lot of people, when they finish singing, will turn to their friend next door and have a conversation about what they've just done, which is completely unnecessary.
Patrick Russell, Director of Music at the Brompton Oratory and Head of Choral Conducting at the Royal Academy of Music. I was in his choir for 6 years at the Brompton Oratory, and he was unfailingly patient with myself and my colleague Ben Davis, who I stand next to in the 16 now, as we were, I would say, bad examples of people who could keep their mouths shut during a rehearsal.
Choral etiquette.
Yeah, and exactly that. And some years ago, having become a conductor been conducting more, I ran into Paddy at a concert, and I thought, I'm going to take this opportunity. And I said to him, Paddy, I need to apologise to you, because I realise now that the boot's on the other foot that I was probably a complete nightmare to have in your choir. And he said, well, it's very good of you to say that, Eamon, but I always thought it was Ben Davis who was the problem. And, of course, I told this story to Ben, and quick as a flash, he said, oh, yeah, well, Paddy said exactly the opposite to me.
How funny.
I have heard in some choral societies now, it's the norm, the difference is if we're note bashing the sopranos, all the basses get out their phones and spend 2 minutes on their phones, yeah, which I found extraordinary. Yeah.
This is absolutely a thing, and that's across the board. I was conducting a recording recently, and we'd finished a take and sat down, and I was giving my notes on my thoughts on the take, and somebody was on their phone in front of me, and it's like a habit, isn't it? It's a reflex.
Yeah.
I think whatever level one is working at, we can all learn from each other, and I don't come to these weeks with any sense of superiority or anything like that. There have been times this week where it's been very challenging, but one learns from that, and sometimes you have to dig deep and you think, well, what can I do to try and make this particular passage work? This afternoon session was a challenge, as we were struggling to cope with where it went harmonically. Although it wasn't harmonically difficult, it did move fast.
Yes.
We were struggling to get on top of that.
And
so
to get that point of reference so you could move on to the
exactly
next
that.
And you took it apart and
sometimes
that was very helpful.
You've just got to break it down.
It worked, yeah.
It did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think your lack of superiority and your ability to make us feel part of a whole ensemble has been very helpful, because you've endeared yourself to us.
It's helped us relax. I've been on one or two courses where I haven't been able to relax at all because I felt so
challenged
and
on edge. Yes.
And
well,
inferior. Mm.
I try to teach the younger singers who I work with, be a good colleague. Mm. You can be a good colleague when you're in charge as well.
Don't point the finger and tut.
Quite so.
Well, my colleague Eamon Dugan there, what an extraordinary choir trainer he is. It's the fastest effect on the sound of a choir that I've ever heard. And he's never afraid to push singers hard, but crucially within a safe and supportive environment, and from such a basis of technical knowledge as well. I'm quickly going to read the track list, as nothing was back announced in the programme. First of all, we heard Luca Marenzio's Iniquos Odio Abui, that's the 16, conducted by Eamon. Then we heard Douglas Yeo playing the serpent. And then about 7 seconds of Danish folk song gets its own track in the Musica Ficta album of Danish folk songs, arranged and conducted by Bo Holten. Then Luca Marenzio again, his Magnificat for double choir, King's College, Cambridge, conducted by Stephen Clebury. The siren was Charlotte Mobbs, soprano. And finally, let's listen to another track from one of that series of several CDs on Coro with the 16, based around late 16th and early 17th century music in Poland, some Polish composers, some Italian. I've chosen an Easter motet, Christus Resurgens by Asprilio Pacelli. And listen to the sound Eamon gets from the 16. It's the same singers, just different from if Harry had been conducting it. I think we could have a really interesting programme at one point if we could get some singers in who work under a lot of different conductors and ask them why it's so different and why the same singers can sound quite different. It shows the level of phrase shaping, drama and personal commitment that's possible in this very Italian repertoire, I think. Hats off to him and them. See you next time.
Korea.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Just before you go, another reminder to try listening on Patreon, which costs just a few pounds per month. Or if you prefer, you can very simply make a one-off donation. You can actually do either via choralchihuahua.com. Thanks.